In May 2011, Vermont's legislature approved, and Democratic Governor Shumlin signed, Act 48, a bill which requires the state to establish a universal health care system by 2017. Governor Shumlin described the plan, known as Green Mountain Care, as a single-payer system that he believed would control health care costs not just by cutting fees to doctors and hospitals, but by fundamentally changing the state's health care system. Although studies had been conducted on how best to design and implement Vermont's new universal health care plan, in December 2014, Governor Shumlin announced that with an estimated $3 billion annual cost by the end of the decade, now was not the right time to go forward, and he put Green Mountain Care on hold. Many supporters of the universal health care plan were angry, with some burning their medical bills at the state capitol in Montpelier and delivering a plate of burnt toast to Shumlin's office, suggesting that the governor's political career had been irreparably damaged. In an effort to overcome this setback, a plan has now been developed to revive Green Mountain Care. The Vermont Workers' Center and the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative, or NESRI, have recently published a study that they say lays out a concrete financing plan to affordably establish universal health care in Vermont by 2017. Your reporter spoke with Anya Rudiger, Director of Programs with NESRI and one of the authors of the plan, who talks about their equitable financing proposal that has already been endorsed by over 100 economists.
This effort was really unique and very pioneering. There's been no other state that has attempted to really move to a universal publicly financed healthcare system. So it's understandable that the governor took a long time to reflect about financing. He missed a deadline to submit a financing plan by about 2 years. It was a pretty heavy lift. But the way he designed his proposal was basically to place the same burden on all companies. So he proposed a flat tax, a flat payroll tax of 11.5%, and every company, whether we're talking about a national company that's doing business in Vermont or your mom-and-pop shop, would have to pay the same 11.5%. And when we saw that in his proposal, we were like, yeah, that's not going to work. And why are you proposing something like that? You got to charge everybody based on their ability to pay. So when we saw that the governor came out with a financing plan that was doomed to failure because of his flat taxes, we thought, well, really, let's just demonstrate that we can show that universal health care not only is feasible in Vermont, but also it can be financed a lot more equitably through progressive taxation, that it can rein in the overall cost of health care, and that it can guarantee much, much improved health care access to all Vermont residents. And that's what our plan set out to do, and we used Governor Shumlin's modeling data as a baseline. So we basically used a lot of his information to just tweak those features that we felt were done in an unfortunate and inequitable way in his plan. And instead, we changed the income tax to be much more based on people's ability to pay. We removed the cap for high earners so that the top 1% actually have to pay their fair share, which they did not in Governor Shumlin's plan. And we designed a new payroll tax model that is quite unique, actually, in that we took into account not just business size, so that smaller businesses pay less than larger businesses, but also the wage gap that businesses have between their what they pay their employees. So we were able to combine that and thus come out with a tax rate that in our model showed that small businesses would very much be able to afford universal health care, as would large businesses, because they currently pay a lot toward their employees' insurance premiums. They actually pay 80% of insurance premiums right now. So the payroll tax just would replace that current contribution.
Anya, I wanted to ask you, how much support is there in the state legislature for this alternative financing plan for universal health care in Vermont than the governor's original plan, which he suspended, took off the table?
The governor is pretty powerful, as is legislative leadership. And, you know, we're currently witnessing the regular routine of party politics. So I think we have to put a lot of pressure onto the legislature to make them realize that there really is a solution to the current problem of the income gap and wealth gap that we experience in Vermont and in other states. It's just that legislators have a hard time actually making that link. They feel like, well, maybe access to healthcare is getting better. Well, it's really hard for people who may be insured but who face deductibles and copays. And legislators don't understand the link between the way we pay for healthcare and how that undermines all the other public services we can or cannot afford to provide, and how that is linked to income inequality that we're currently experiencing. If low-income people pay so much more per head for their health care than wealthy people, that is a huge part of our current income and wealth gap that legislators really do have to address.
Anya, I wanted to ask you about the importance of what you're doing there in Vermont in terms of creating a viable model for universal health care. How important is that for the rest of the country in terms of moving the nation towards single payer? As I understand it, in Canada, the first universal health care single payer system developed in Saskatchewan originally, and then the success there spawned the adoption of the plan nationally by the Canadian federal government. So how does that relate to the situation in the U.S., you think?
Well, that's exactly our plan, Scott. So that is what we're looking at as a model. We think that Vermont is a great state to start in. It's a small state, and we feel the Healthcare as a Human Right campaign has made a tremendous difference there in getting the first universal publicly financed healthcare system passed into law. So we think that Vermont could be an example. It could, in fact, be the first domino that could fall and lead to an effect of a domino effect of state-level healthcare wins that could then potentially result in a critical mass of states pushing the federal debate and the federal policy process, and then ultimately result in national publicly financed healthcare.
That was Anya Rudiger, Director of Programs with the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. Learn more about Vermont's effort to establish a single-payer healthcare system by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.